This is the Frogcast.
Welcome to the Frogcast as we gather here tonight to recap the SMU game and look forward to Texas Tech, as well as talk about expectations for the Frogs. We are number two in the coaches poll, but you'd have a hard time convincing a lot of fans that we are in that position. That and so much more on this episode of the Frogcast. Well, Trey, we had a big win there in Fort Worth the other night where the Horned Frogs defeated the SMU Mustangs 56-37. There were times that it looked like the Frogs were going to win by 35, and there were moments where I thought, oh my gosh, we are going to lose at home to SMU like 2011 all over again. There were some things that made the Frogs look really good, as well as a handful of things that made us feel exposed at times, not the least of which, more injuries, just what we needed to hear. Well, Trey, you were there, you were in the stands, you and your little boy were up on the Jumbotron from what I heard, and so I would love to hear your take from being in kind of being inside of Eamon Carter watching the Horned Frogs and the Mustangs battle.
Yeah, it was great atmosphere. Yeah, I took my son to his first TCU game, so that was fun. And yeah, I'd put a picture on Instagram, and they put it up on the big screen, so that was really cool. But yeah, I thought the crowd was really great. The TCU crowd was really great. The SMU crowd was kind of a little lackluster, which I don't know what it's going to take for them to start showing up to this game more. But overall, it was great. You know, I thought Dotson, Boykin, and Green were fantastic. That's the TCU's version of the triplets. You know, the Cowboys had Emmett, Aikman, and Irvin, and then the Frogs have Boykin, Dotson, and Green, and they lit it up. I mean, you couldn't really ask for much better. Boykin still, to me, you know, in the Minnesota games, he missed a couple throws. He had an interception against SMU, and the throw was really bad. I'm not trying to be super critical. I just thought, you know, through the first three games, he's kind of pretty much on par with where he was last season. I thought he'd be a little better. I'm just being really nitpicky on that because the guy had five freaking touchdowns and threw for 454 yards. So those three, I thought, really stood out. On the flip side, couple play calls. I'm not a huge fan of the Wildcat. I don't know how you feel about it, but a couple times they put Sean Nixon back there. One time, they put, I think it was Travorce Johnson back there when they were like fourth and one on the goal line. So, you know, I'm not a huge fan of that. And then, like you mentioned, the defense, another, you know, huge injury. Ranthony Texada, Tejada, whatever. Man, that's tough. You know, it's especially just, I don't know. It's deflating to me that there's another injury. Not only injury, it's a season-ending injury. And, you know, you just – it feel like when it rains, it pours. You know, when's it going to stop? Is it going to be another player the next game? I hope not. But, man, and, you know, giving up 500 yards, it's not good. You know, trying to stay positive, but it was rough. They won. It's a rivalry game. It's great. It's just – it's more going forward that concerns me more than anything.
Yeah, for those of you keeping score at home, that is eight starters that we have lost since the beginning of the season. Eight starters that we have lost since the beginning of the season. And Tejada was the, you know, he was the anchor of that defensive backfield. I know that Kindred is kind of the quarterback back there, but Tejada has shut down that wide side of the field as a shutdown corner out there on an island. And to lose him on such a freak trip, basically, was that was just sad. I just hate seeing that. And, you know, the only thing I hope for is that no defensive players are hurt in the recording of this podcast. That's about the only hope that we have. I'm going to go ahead and agree with you on two things. There were some moments that Boykin was not as polished as we hope he would be. We had heard a lot about his growth during the summer, especially that he'd stayed there and stayed focused, worked with Sonny Cumbie all summer as much as he could. And, you know, there's some moments that he's going to look better, and there's some moments he has looked better. But the interception was rough. I'm going to admit I'm not sure if the receiver ran the right route. But there were some other times that you're like, man, I wish we could have made that throw. And I will offer a hearty amen. I am not a big fan of the Wildcat. I am not a big fan of putting Johnson back there in the Wildcat between you and me and everybody listening, that he's at the bottom of the depth chart, in my opinion, at the running backs right now. And when everybody knew what was going to happen, and that's a second straight year we've gotten shut down on fourth and goal at the one against SMU, and that touchdown could have changed a lot of things. So in spite of those things, in spite of the injuries, in spite of some of the play call, we did put up 56 points. We did have 720 total yards, and we saw Boykin, like you referenced, throw for over 450 yards. And that's just not kids play. But we're going to need to score 40 to 50 to 60 points a game to keep things competitive in the Big 12. I watched the game on Fox Sports Southwest up here in Chicago. The crowd looked great. They said it was one of the largest crowds that we've ever had at Amon Carter for a home game. And so to see that kind of energy for SMU, to be honest, it's not like we got Texas, and like you referenced, it's not like we had 7,000 fans from Oklahoma come down. That's got to be one of the largest crowds to ever gather of TCU fans to watch TCU. So that is good for – it's good to see Fort Worth finally get behind TCU in a way that they deserve. One other thing –
yeah, they said – sorry, real quick. Saw that it was, at the, I believe, the third largest crowd – for Amon G. Carter Stadium. And you mentioned Fort Worth getting behind this team. It's crazy this season. I know, I'm sure a top five, you know, ranking doesn't hurt, but I've had multiple people message me, like text message or Facebook message, because they know I'm a TCU fan, and ask me about tickets, not wanting my tickets, but like, hey, where's the best place to get tickets? Or I saw tickets for this price. Is this a good price? You know, a friend I went to high school, you know, with messaged me, and she was like, hey, you know, my son is obsessed with TCU. I don't know how old he is, like elementary school age, somewhere in there. Like, we're getting tickets, da, yada, da. So it's crazy, man. I mean, there is a lot of excitement for the team around DFW right now.
That is great. I love
to get off track.
Yeah, no, that is great. I love to see the energy from Fort Worth behind TCU. You know, being in the Big 12 goes a long way. People were not showing up for this game when it was in the Conference USA when TCU was playing SMU. But that kind of energy is great. That kind of crowd is great. It looked good on TV, too. I love the whiteout. Coordinating that's got to be difficult, but I love the energy on TV. And it looked like fans actually stayed in the game for the second half rather than staying out there and drinking their martinis in the tailgate party. Even though the game was closer than we wanted, even though there were moments that we really stressed out, I will add, this game was fun to watch. This game was fun to watch. SMU came to play. You got to give all the credit to their team. You got to give all the credit to their quarterback, Davis. And if I'm an SMU fan, I am ponying up, no pun intended, to keep Chad Morris in town as long as they can, because that is quite a turnaround to be as competitive as they were with Baylor, to be as competitive as they were with TCU, to beat UNT, who they had just killed them the year before. That goes a long way, and I hope that they can be a competitive team. There's no reason they can't be competitive in the AAC every year. Well, what else do you take away?
I agree with you there. So, they are fun, and I mean, you're right. They've got to find a way to keep Chad Morris there. I mean, it looks like he's doing positive things for that program, and you know, we talked about last week, should we keep SMU? Should we drop SMU? And if he can get it turned around, and I'm not saying, you know, they have to win 11 or 12 games every year, but I mean, if they can, you know, consistently win 9, 10 games, maybe, every, you know, every couple of years they do win 11, 12, something, you know, I don't know if they can ever go undefeated, get to that point, but, you know, who knows, you know, but it's fun. It's a lot funner when SMU is playing like that. I mean, I watched them play Baylor. That, you know, that game was really close in the first half, and they were scrappy in that game, and they were great against TCU as well. So It's cool. Cool to see, even though, you know, I despise them a little bit. But.
Absolutely. Well, it's nice to actually hate SMU again. I have no memory all these years of being a TCU fan of actually hating SMU and thinking of them as a rival. Their only rivalry with us has been pure geography. It's not because of what's gone on in the field. So it's good to see that. Yeah, there's no reason they can't be competitive in the American, and there's a lot of hot coaches in that conference, and I hope that they're able to hold on to Chad Morris as long as they can. What else did you see in SMU that's worth rehashing, aside from the injuries, aside from some of the defensive struggles we had, and maybe the points that we put up with the triplets, as you mentioned? Anything else that you want to take away from being there in the stadium, watching the dynamics of the game?
Now, I mentioned Dotson and Green earlier, but Kevontae Turpin, once again, that guy is so fun to watch. His long touchdown reception, I mean, he just completely pulled away from everybody. You know, him in the return game is great. And, you know, I heard Coach Patterson after the game mention, you know, him and Jeremy Curley in the same sentence. And I think when you get mentioned with Jeremy Curley, that's a pretty high compliment in my book. But the only other concern really coming out of that game was TCU had a lot of penalties, 9 for 115. They hadn't committed that many penalties since the Tech game last year. They had 10 for 77. And then against Baylor last year, they had 8 penalties for 110. So they're going to have to clean that up. I mean, I don't know how you felt about the officiating. I don't necessarily like to blame them. From the stands, you know, it's a little bit harder to see. I know some of them looked a little bit iffy. I know other people on Twitter and message boards kind of had some critical comments about the refs. What did you think about how the game was called?
I thought there were a couple pass interference calls where they jumped the gun. And I also think that Bryson Henderson reached out and touched the quarterback with his fingernail, and they called a roughing the passer. There were some questionable calls, more importantly at key times, that kept some drives alive. They were questionable calls, but that doesn't have anything to do with our corners just getting torched at times. So even though some of those calls could have gone either way, even though some of those pass interference calls, the ref could have kept his flag in his pocket. That didn't help SMU get over 500 yards on our defense, and that's the real concern to me. I wasn't happy with the officiating, but I don't think it played as big a role as some of the other people are advocating.
Yeah.
Well, we have SMU in the rearview mirror, and we have non-conference play in the rearview mirror, so we are moving forward to play Texas Tech. But before we get into Tech, we want to talk about this awkward situation that TCU fans are in. In the coaches poll that came out Sunday afternoon, TCU is the number two team in the country. That means that the coaches in the country think that we are better than Ole Miss, who just went to Tuscaloosa and beat the number two team in the country. They think we're better than Michigan State, who beat Oregon. We are in a situation where we are number two in the country, and all of the expectations that pushed us into the season seems to be cresting upward. And at the same time, it feels as if everyone is like drunk on depression about the fear of this season about to fall apart at any moment. Now, chances are most of us are somewhere in between. We are realistic about the injuries and its impact on defense, as well as believing in our offense's ability to score points. Trey, when you look at this tension of both the soaring expectations that are being laid upon us by people outside of the program, as well as the reality of the injuries on the field, how do you live with both of those things of being ranked so highly as what being well aware of what's going on in terms of injury?
Yeah, you know, when we first did our first podcast this year, I predicted that the Frogs would probably lose one game. I mean, you know, it's really hard to go undefeated. I predicted we'd probably lose in Oklahoma if we did lose a game. TCU still, you know, number two team in the country in the coaches poll, and if this was any other year, any other circumstance, I would be, you know, flying sky high right now. But I just don't feel – this is personally how I feel. Just watching TCU, and I watch a lot of other teams too, I just don't necessarily feel like they've been playing like the number two team in the country. But then I watch these other games, and you see Ohio State struggle with Northern Illinois. You see a Missouri who – I know they're – ranked in the lower 20s, struggle with Connecticut. You see UCLA, a lot of people are high on their quarterback, Josh Rosen, but and they eke out a win against BYU. You know, so, you know, and then Alabama loses, USC loses, you know, Oregon has a loss. So you see all these other teams and it's like, well, everybody kind of has their own warts, their own problems. You know, Oklahoma, they, you know, give up, what, 38 points to Tulsa. So it's, I don't know. It's like when I watch the Frogs, I don't feel like they're number two. And I think that I'm basing it on the injuries because the offense, I think, is worthy of a number two ranking. But the defense is not the defense that we all expected to have coming into the season. So with all the injuries, it's just hard for me to not see that as a huge issue. I mean, I don't know any team. I don't think Alabama couldn't overcome losing seven starters on their defense. And they're, you know, considered almost like an NFL team with the type of talent they have. So, you know, I look around. Ole Miss, I think they're a really good team. They look good. I think Texas A&M has looked good at times, but I'm still not completely sold on Kyle Allen as a prime quarterback this year. I think that kid's going to be really good in future years to come, but I don't know if it's necessarily this year. Oh, like I said earlier, Ohio State has struggled. Michigan State's looked good. You know, they have a good win over Oregon. So I don't know, man. It's like I'm trying not to be doom and gloom, but when you lose that many starters on defense, that has to become an issue at some point, right? I mean, it just has to.
At some point, you think it has to catch up with us. But I look around, and I agree with you. I watched almost the entire Ohio State-Northern Illinois game, and that is not the number one team in the country if you bank it off of that game. Northern Illinois is a quality program. They're going to probably win the MAC this year, but they would not go 500 in the Big Ten. And they're a local team that I pull for up here in suburban Chicago. I follow NIU. I pull for NIU. Ohio State should have lost that game to the MAC. And, I'm not impressed with them. The only team that's really caught my eye in terms of being one of the complete teams in the country is Ole Miss. And forgive me for not thinking that Ole Miss is world beaters, considering what we did to that defense last year. And so even though we have all of these injuries, which are real and hurt us, I still have confidence in what Gary is able to piece together, no matter how far down the depth chart we go with limits. But, you know, we're banged up. Other people are banged up. Other people are going to have have the next man come up, so to speak. And so even though we have our roster seemingly falling apart on the defensive side of the ball, I don't see anything else that impresses me. I see the Pac-10 that doesn't have a team in the Pac-10, I mean, in the top 10. Nobody believed that USC was the number six team in the country. Oregon has a loss. They might be able to run the table in the Pac-12, but I don't think that they're going to be able to do that as well. So as frustrated as some Frog fans might feel, and I understand that, I think the other teams in the country, especially this early in the season, are feeling that kind of frustration as well. And so living with that tension is not easy, but all I'm doing right now is reminding everybody, enjoy this. This year is going to be special, no matter where we finish at. I hope everybody's going to be able to enjoy this season.
Here's my biggest concern, right, is that TCU's always, you know, had the great defense, the really good defense, you know, it's never been bad or average. It's normally pretty good or excellent every year. And so when the Frogs would have games, say, last year against Kansas, where they kind of struggled offensively, or the West Virginia game where it's a tight game, you know, they won by one, the defense really it can kind of cover up for the offense. But this year, I just don't think they're going to have that luxury. The offense is going to have to be on every single game, and I just think that's hard to live up to. I think it's hard no matter at any level, whether it's Tom Brady, Tony Romo, or Trevon Boykin, at any level, I don't think your offense is going to be on every week. Like some weeks, there's going to be one or two games for the Frogs this season where the defense is going to have to come up big, where they're going to have to get a big stop. And will they be able to do that? I mean, that question is yet to be answered, but that is what concerned me. When you lose that many starters, at some point your defense is going to be asked to win a game for you. And with all these backups, can they do it? I have the utmost respect and trust for Gary Patterson and the entire world, but I feel like it's asking even a great defensive mind like him, it's asking a lot of him to just fill in these holes with freshman, sophomore, inexperienced players. I mean, I just feel like that's asking a lot, and I just think you have to temper expectations a little bit. I think you have to as a TCU fan.
You know, you're probably right, because if in mid-August we would have been told we have to beat Baylor with our second-team defense, everybody would, even the most faithful Frog fans would say, yeah, I don't know about all that. Well, that's what we're going to have to do. You know, it was our second team defense on the chart that is basically going to be rolled out there as we head into Big 12 play. I actually had a friend of mine that is not a TCU fan, he's a Big 10 fan, say to me, it looks like you guys have adopted the Baylor model. I don't think he quite knew what an insult that was to us, but he said you're going to have no defense and you're going to hope to score 65 points every game in order to compete. So looks like we've adopted the Baylor plan for this year. It hasn't worked out for Art Briles when the chips were down. And that's how you're able to lose to West Virginia by two touchdowns in Morgantown. So we will see how all of that plays out. Well, we'll get a big test of it this week as the Frogs travel to scenic Lubbock out there in the Panhandle to take on Texas Tech. Tech, of course, went to Fayetteville this last Saturday and beat Brett Bielema and the Hogs. And I have really enjoyed watching Brett Bielema get what's been coming to him the last 2 weeks. The Hogs got beat by Toledo, and then they got beat by Tech. Texas Tech is 3-0. Texas Tech is going to have an energetic crowd at 3:45 when they kick off there next Saturday on Fox. Trey, what do you see as the Frogs make their way out there to Lubbock to take on the Red Raiders?
Yeah, first of all, you know, I'm not a huge Cliff Kingsbury guy. I mean, I think he's pretty good offensive mind.
Do you think he's good looking?
My wife thinks he is. I'm not too big of a fan of his. But I love how he went after Brett Bielema after that game. I mean, it gave me a lot of respect for that guy, and I love those comments. But I think this is going to be a tough game for TCU, man. Patrick Mahomes looks really good this season, completing 66% of his passes, has 9 touchdowns, only 3 interceptions. You know, he also has the running threat. He has 4 rushing touchdowns this year already. So I think he's going to pose a lot of problems for the TCU defense, and I mean, a lot of TCU fans, I said this on Twitter, weren't very happy with me, but I think the Frogs lose this week in Lubbock just because I think there's a couple reasons. One, I think there's a little bit of a revenge factor in there after the Frogs dropped 82 on them last year. And I think replacing Tejada is going to be tough, you know, along with the other injuries. If this game was maybe in a couple weeks, my opinion might be different. I just think working in a new corner, along with the other injuries this week, going on the road to Lubbock, which is always a tough place to play. You know, the Frogs haven't had a ton of success there. This game worries me, man. I hate to say it, but I think the Frogs leave with the loss.
Yeah, going out there to Lubbock is going to be the biggest challenge we face so far this year. You know, I think a lot of us, when we looked at both the development of the defense before all of the injuries, as well as the schedule, we were looking at Tech as a 6-6 team, and I was projecting Tech to not even – I thought this was going to be a dumpster fire this year for Kingsbury and the boys out there in Lubbock. But they are clearly they've clearly improved. They're clearly a team that is going to be competitive in the Big 12. They're clearly bowl-bound. And so the challenge that we're facing with them is probably the challenge that I thought we were going to face with Oklahoma State by the time we got to early November. So I'm going to hold out for a win. I'm going to hold out for Patterson's ability to outcoach Kingsbury. But this is going to be a dogfight. There is no two ways about it. Patrick Mahomes is a great quarterback. I was convinced of that last year watching them play Baylor when they could have beat Baylor on Thanksgiving weekend last year. And so we're going to really see if that secondary is prepared to handle the spread that the Texas Tech is going to throw at them. We're lucky in that it's a day game. If this was at 7 o'clock, I would probably be agreeing with you that this is gonna be a loss. But somewhere in there, I think we're gonna be able to scrape out a victory. But it is gonna be ugly. I posted this on one of the message boards this morning, but I think every game this year is going to feel like the West Virginia game last year, where you are sitting on the edge of your seat and we are fighting and crawling back, and there will not be any wins where we score 82 points and outscore people by 52. It is going to be an ugly seat. It is going to be some ugly wins that we're going to have to get if we're going to be able to continue week by week to continue through Big 12 play undefeated.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, even though I'm predicting it, or I guess predicting is the right word, a TCU loss. I mean, I'm not seeing a blowout by any means. I mean, I'm thinking 56, 53, 50, 48, something like that. Hell, you know, 70, 65. It could get crazy with these two offenses going at it, and really the lack of defense on both sides. You know, one with Tech not really having defense, and not with our injuries, it could get out of hand, and the game could last 4 or 5 hours just because it's going to be so many points being put up. But yeah, I think it's going to be a really close game. I just think with it being a road game, and facing that offense with kind of a guy who can pass and run on you, you know, we saw it this week. If SMU can put up 500 yards, I mean, what can Tech do? So I'm with you, man. It's going to be a close game, and I think you're right. It's going to be like that with pretty much every game, maybe outside of Kansas. You know, it's going
to
be.
Well, I thought that last year too.
This season's going to take some years off our lives, possibly, because it's going to be nuts.
Yeah, and this Saturday is actually my wife's birthday.
Oh no!
So I'm sure she'll love me watching a 6.5 hour football game that goes into triple overtime.
Right.
One of the funny things I have noted already. Not that I dabble in this. The line opened at 13.5, TCU favorite, and it's already been bet down to 9.5 within an hour. So you can see where the money is flowing on that. And I would not touch that game. I don't gamble. I don't gamble on sports, but I would not touch that game with a 10-foot pole. Other than I would take the over, no matter what the number was. If it was 107, I'd take the over, because I think that they're gonna need a third number indicator on the scoreboard out there in Lubbock if this thing gets going. That might be a track meet. Last time I remember going to the game. Actually, Sonny Cumbie was the quarterback when I went to the game in 2004 when we got beat 70-35. And that was.
Yeah, I went to that one.
Oh, that was the longest trip home I've ever been on. It's the only time I've ever been to Lubbock. I'm never going back there. It was awful. All that beer before 11 o'clock and for a kickoff, too, was not probably smart. But that was a long time ago, so we won't dig into that. Anything else on Tech you want to share before we move forward?
No, I want us to win, obviously, just to stay undefeated. And my brother-in-law is a Tech fan, so I don't want to have to. I had the whole year to just shut him up. If he ever said anything, I could just say 82, and he would just kind of cower down and go back into his hole. But I don't want us to lose, because I don't want to have to put up with his crap for the next year.
Yeah, it is. It has been quiet on the Tech front, and 82 yeah. points will do that to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, 82 points will do that. Because we had lost to Tech the first 2 years in the Big 12, and that was a convincing win. It was worth it to lose those first two in order to hang 82 on those boys. And people forget we probably could have scored 100. So.
Yeah, it could have gotten even worse.
It could have gotten worse. Step back from TCU in our big game this week out in Lubbock. Is there anything going on nationally? Maybe a game that you saw this last week, or a trend that you've observed, and maybe some conference play and the way the rankings are shaking out. What do you see shaping up nationally in the college football scene that you think our listeners would want to hear about?
Yeah, I mentioned it earlier. It's just how everybody seems to have their own issues. I don't know if an elite team has come to the forefront this season. LSU looked good against Auburn, but at the same time, I never understood to begin with why Auburn was ranked so high.
Oh, no kidding.
I mean, that was yeah, that baffled me from the preseason rankings. So, you know, how heavy do you weigh that win? I picked Clemson to be one of the final four teams. They, you know, struggle with Louisville win 2017. So, you know, I don't consider them an elite team. I mentioned Oklahoma earlier. I mean, they put up 52, but they also allowed 38 to Tulsa. You know, if you put me on the spot right now, I probably say that Ole Miss and Michigan State are probably the two best teams I've seen so far, I would probably say.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I would think that Ole Miss is the best team in the country right now. If for nothing else, they went to Tuscaloosa and won. And as you already said, you know, Alabama is like an NFL team to a lot of people. They don't recruit. They just draft. They just find the 22 kids they want and go get them. And so for them to be able to get that win in Tuscaloosa, as sloppy as it would have been, it seemed at times, that's a big win. And that's something that not very many people are able to do. And this was not a kick six. They went out there and they beat Alabama. Michigan State, I'm living in Big Ten country. I still kind of have a bias against the Big Ten. You know, they should rename their division Slow and Slower. But I think Michigan State losing Pat Narduzzi is going to catch up with them in Big Ten play. I think they're going to lose a game they shouldn't lose. And I wouldn't be surprised if they lose to Harbaugh and Michigan Wolverines this year. But I'm going to camp out on the Rebels. I think Ole Miss is probably the best team in the country. But I don't think anybody in the SEC is going to be undefeated. If that's one thing I can see in national college football right now, I don't think we're going to have a team in the playoff that is undefeated. And after Boise lost to BYU, I don't think we're going to have a team from the Gang of Five that is undefeated. Maybe Toledo, but I don't think a MAC team is going to make the playoff or make any noise on that. And so we're going to have, like we had last year, a real jockeying of those one and possibly two lost teams trying to make their way into the playoff. And it's going to create for the debate that ESPN wants for the worthless polls that are going to come out for six straight weeks. So we'll see what comes up forward. We'll see what unfolds on that moving forward. But that's kind of what I'm thinking on national football. A lot of one and lost, two lost teams come mid-November that are fighting for those four spots in the playoff. Well, as we head towards wrapping up, is there anything else that we wrote down, talked about before we started that you thought we needed to share for the good of the cause, Trey?
Well, actually, I just saw an interesting tweet from Max Olson at ESPN. He tweeted out that the ESPN FPI, which I believe stands for Football Power Index, gives TCU a 68% chance of beating Texas Tech, down from 82% in the preseason. So take that for what it's worth, but it looks like the injuries in the FPI have altered the Frogs' chances, so I guess we'll see how that shakes out.
Oh, yes, we will. Yes, we will. That's an interesting, if you want to get on some inside baseball, I have been following some of those rankings from the FPI that ESPN has, and it doesn't go chalk the way that a lot of the polls do, the way that the coaches poll or the AP poll does. They, for better or for worse, they assess a lot of things on and off the field to project their percentages. So to see that drop so much means that people that spend their entire day looking at football think that there's a higher likelihood we're going to lose than there was a week ago, especially that there was a month ago. So
it's going to be a shootout, man. It's just get ready, settle in, and just hold on, because I think this game is going to be freaking nuts.
I think it is going to be nuts. You know, in a lot of ways, this is what we were looking for when they joined the Big 12. Every freaking week, we're going to have a big game. We've got Tech followed by the Longhorns coming to Austin, which we didn't even get to talk about. If you want to talk about a kid I feel bad for, the kicker from the University of Texas.
Yeah, oh, we didn't mention that. Oh, man. That's brutal. That's a tough way to lose.
That is a tough way to lose. If you want to see some sad, funny stuff, there were a couple of vines from the sideline of the player celebrating, and then you catch them in live action realizing that the kick was missed with their back turned. And it's just like the most deflating moment you'll ever see in sports. So I felt bad for them. But Gerard Hurd, that kid's a baller. You know,
yeah.
he's gonna put a scare in us. If we couldn't slow down Matt Davis, we're gonna have a hard time with Gerard Hurd. So that will increase the odds and you know, raise the stakes for that game when the Longhorns come. Hopefully when the Frogs are 4-0. So I did tweet a friend of mine today that I think the Longhorns are looking at 1-5 because they've got Oklahoma State and then TCU and then the Red River Shootout. So they could be staring 1-5 in the face, even with a seemingly improved team and a quarterback for the first time since the first half of the national championship game against Bama. So.
Yeah, and I think after the Red River rivalry, they have Kansas State after that. So it's tough. It's going to be tough sledding for the Longhorns.
Yeah, they have historically had a hard time with Bill Snyder. So yeah, well, couldn't happen to a better group of couldn't happen to a better group of fans, right?
Right.
All right. Well, Trey, I think we have covered everything in terms of looking back on SMU's big or Frog's big win at SMU, as well as looking forward to the game at Tech. So hopefully next week at this time, we will either be consoling each other as well as the Horned Frog Nation or celebrating a big win out in Lubbock over an undefeated Texas Tech team. That is the plan. So for Trey Fallon, I am Jeff Mitchell, and we want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Frogcast.